And it's my turn this week to welcome everyone to looking back through the files of the Bunyip for Wednesday, October 11, 2023. And we're here in the Gawler Cultural Heritage Centre at the basement of the Gawler Civic Centre. Beautiful room, lovely ambience. Hello, Jeanette.
Hi, Kay.
And we're here to read Looking Back Through the Files of the Bunyip, and I'll kick off with 150 years ago. Scotch Church Picnic. The members of the church, with the juveniles of their households and the scholars of the Sunday school, enjoyed a most agreeable rural excursion on Tuesday to Mr. Dawson's very picturesque farm, the locality being known as Campbell's Crossing, about a mile south of Roseworthy. The caravan of omnibuses, etc., left Gawler early in the day and soon reached their intended encampment, the distance being just such as to render the jaunt agreeable and enlivening without proving a fatigue. The day was as delightful as if bespoke for the occasion. Cheerful sunshine with cool and refreshing breezes, and we confess to having personally enjoyed ourselves throughout the day up to the maximum of rural and social felicity.
It sounds just like one of the Sunday school picnic photos, doesn't it?
It sounds beautiful. Everyone in their best, and the flies buzzing, and the wind wafting, and the sunshine, and anyway.
And so many photos. We've got a few in our family collection of Sunday school picnics from probably a little bit later.
Yeah.
About 1900. Oh, how lovely. But they're just so beautiful. They look, you know, all in their Sunday best.
Yep. Having literally.
It was such a part of the cultural sort of thing that's sad that we lost that night.
We have. I mean, I went out to the theatre last Friday night down to the Shedley to watch Singing in the Rain, and I just sort of went in my comfortable jeans and my, you know, my cardigan and whatever, because I'm still feeling a little bit ordinary. And I thought afterwards, you know, I really should make a better effort. We always used to dress up to go to the theatre, you know, the heels, the stockings, the skirt, the coat, the nice jacket, the makeup, the pearls, or whatever. And I thought, oh, maybe I should just go to a bit more effort in future.
It's nice to dress up occasionally. It's something that we've lost in our culture, and it's fun. It's actually fun.
It is fun, and you feel good.
You do.
Yeah. When we were on our tour around Scandinavia and whatever earlier this year, and there were two or three occasions where you dressed up to go to dinner, and I remember one of the chaps on our first tour said, "Gee, you girls look really like you're girls, you know." Yeah. He was our age. "You look really, really nice." So dressed up and it's like, oh, okay, so what do we look like ordinarily? But anyway, no, it was a compliment. You took it, you know, you take it as a compliment that you really did look special. Yeah. But, anyway.
I always love, you know, watching historical costume dramas when they're at the theatre, and they're just so beautifully
dressed.
Aren't
they gorgeous?
And, the costumes are just...
Yeah, I think that was one reason why I love Pride and Prejudice, like the BBC one that went on for weeks and weeks.
Yes.
Which to me was the best one.
And oh, absolutely. Yes.
I just loved the costuming and the setting and how it was all presented. Mm. It was just...
Well, they dressed for dinner every night.
Well, they did.
So, you know, in a different one where, you know, he comes down in his suit and his father complains that he's late until mother liked us to dress for dinner and I keep up the tradition.
Well, can't disagree with that. No, I do still sometimes change for... like into something cleaner, especially being outside and dagging around in the garden. If you've got house guests, and I do quite often have my friends come to stay, and I always get changed because I just think, they don't want me sitting around my daggy garden clothes.
But it makes a thing of dinner. It makes it a bit of a ritual where you sit down, you're well dressed, and you talk to each other.
Yes, we do.
Not just eat food and go.
We do shove everything to the end of one end of the table, mind you, and then we cleared the table after dinner and play cards.
Yeah, but, you that's know, part of the tradition. No, that's lovely. That's part of the social thing. That is part of the social ritual, which is nice.
I make efforts to clean off my kitchen table, and every time I do it, I think, right, it's going to stay like that. And then after about a week, it's like, where did all this stuff come from?
That sounds exactly like our kitchen table. Oh, it's a nightmare.
Oh, well, we live, don't we?
We do. So,
you're up to 100 years ago.
100 years ago. The house famine. The destruction of brickworks in the floods accentuates the difficulty with regard to house building. It is safe to venture the opinion that for the time being, the building trade has come within a measure of overtaking the house shortage. It is not nearly so difficult to hire or purchase a house, especially the latter as it was, though quite difficult enough in all conscience. So this being the early 20s, I'm guessing the housing shortage is post-war. So I know post World War II there was a massive housing shortage.
But what was this about the floods?
Yes.
So it must have been a flood that wiped out the brickworks somewhere.
Yes, yeah. It would be by the river because they need the water for the brickmaking.
Yeah.
So it was probably
the clay. That's where the clay comes from too for the brickmaking. That's an interesting story, isn't it?
It is. Yeah. And of course, brick was becoming more and more predominant in house building.
Yeah, well, 1920s, you had all the red brick Federation style houses with their lovely verandas and the little balustrades. And I love that Federation style house.
I do too.
Yeah, really much prefer them to the Victorian style. But person lives in a 1970s sort of bungalow, but you know
mine. My house just has the window dressing. The bricks were a luxury item.
Yep.
And stone was cheap, so they used bricks just for window dressing.
Oh, the coins, yes. The coins around the windows and the brick. Yeah, well, that was always the way, wasn't it?
Mm,
you look in this building here where they've just got the brick coins.
As the window, sort of the fancy bit to highlight. Because bricks originally were very expensive to make, more expensive because they had to be made, with stone, I guess, was just readily available.
Well, they would have, originally, some of it would have come out as ballast in ships. I know a lot of building materials came out as ballast. Yeah. They thought of everything, didn't they?
They
had to. They had to be resourceful.
Yeah. Well, they were very resourceful and really good at recycling. They weren't wasteful at all.
Mm.
So the Victorians were the great recyclers, even bone. Everything, ash from the fire bone, was all recycled.
Yep.
So that's why in Dickens he has characters that make a fortune from rubbish.
Yes.
Because they're selling it all on to be
recycled. Well, I have a belief, and you can laugh at me, which is one day we will go back and we will start mining all of our rubbish dumps. We will start going through them to extract valuable stuff that's actually been thrown out. We'll start recycling the iron, the steel, sorting through them. It's got to happen because
there must be, especially construction.
Oh, when you think of the copper and the lead and all those valuable, precious metals that have just gone into the landfill over the years. I mean, I try to recycle everything, but it's not always possible.
No, it isn't.
Anywho, 50 years ago, danger crossing proposals. The District Council of Freeling will ask the Highways Department to construct either an underpass or overpass at the Gawler-Kapunda and Daviston Templars intersection near Freeling. The move follows two deaths there in a car accident on September 1. Other deaths have occurred at the intersection in recent years. The district clerk, Mr. Roger Wood, said council had investigated the problem and decided that give way and stop signs were not the answer. But instead what they did, Gawler and Kapunda and Daviston, was they offset the intersections, which is a lot more cheaper. So instead of having a crossing, you've got two T-junctions.
Oh, yes. Yeah,
which slows people down, although we've got one near Two Wheels on Germantown Road and the cars just sort of slide around and don't slow down that much because it's not quite offset enough. Anyway, people are people, aren't they?
They are indeed. So, 25 years ago, local pharmacies threatened by supermarkets. Local pharmacist Humphrey George has got behind an Australia-wide campaign opposing the threatened intrusion of supermarkets into community pharmacies. Mr. George, who is the South Australian president of the Pharmacy Guild of Australia, said the current system of pharmacist-owned pharmacies provided the highest levels of accountability, access to professional healthcare.
There you go.
It's almost a tongue twister with all the
pharmacies in a row there, aren't there?
Yes. I don't know if
President Pharmacy Guild of Australia, the pharmacist-owned pharmacies. Yes, it's just too hard. 10 years ago, cracks in egg code. New free-range labels soon to hit egg cartons on supermarket shelves will let consumers know what they are buying. However, some producers are divided on the new industry code. Under a new code, recently confirmed by the state government, producers would need to comply with a series of regulations to gain government-stamped free-range accreditation. These include a 1,500 hens per hectare cap, at least 8 hours access to outdoors and adequate overhead shade to encourage the hens to roam. Okay. Well, I have free-range eggs all the time. Well, that's it. That is it for this week. What an interesting little array of stories.
Yes, there were.
Mm. Yeah, that it wasn't all about the weather.
No, for a change.
So it's goodbye, good night from me, not good afternoon from me, and good afternoon, Jeanette. We'll speak next week.
Yes, until next week, Kay.